You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, we are back, everybody. Part two of our post-fight coverage for UFC San Diego. This is the UFC San Diego post-fight show live on the MMA Fighting YouTube channel. And if you're listening after the fact, thank you very much. I am Mike Heck. We got the Prince of Positivity, Alexander K. Lee, in the building. We'll hear from him, get his thoughts on this very fun card in just a few moments. But joining us right now from the backstage area in San Diego, there he is, Mr. Jose Youngs. Hi, Jose. Did you enjoy the festivities today?
I missed a lot of the fights because of the storms are going back here. It just felt like it was like one after the other after the other. But you can't really tell, but there's like a black curtain right here. And then behind that black curtain is underneath. Actually, you can't, all above us and going down the side is the seats, like where the fans sat. So like when people were walking, we could hear above them. So like, for example, the co-main event, going into the third round, everyone started stamping their feet and it just felt like the roof was going to fall off. I didn't watch almost a second of the co-main event fight because Yasmin was back here talking and Gerald Mershar and Azamat was back here talking like back to back to back. So I missed almost all of it, but it felt like the entire building was going to collapse on top of us. And you could hear the fans like literally like 5 feet over from us. That's why I was really hoping when the audio would come through on these post-fight scrums that things wouldn't get demonetized for like entrance music, because it was about as clear as day. It was a very unique experience here in covering the fight in San Diego.
Well, that seems like a lot of fun. It was kind of like Jacksonville when Shemaiah fought Gilbert Burns. I was basically in the back. You were out front. So it was like an earthquake back there as that fight was going on. But let's talk about the main event. Let's talk about Marlon Vera and his performance. Dominic Cruz on all three judges' scorecards is up 2-1 heading into that fourth round, Jose. And none of that really mattered because Chito Vera closed the show with a vicious left high kick to the nose, to the face of Dominic Cruz, gets the knockout win. The guy is just surging right now. He wants a title fight, but he understands there's just so much going on at 135 right now that patience is a virtue, and that's how he fights as well. So your thoughts on just the whole day, the whole week for Marlon Vera, just chill, cool as a cucumber, and gets the biggest victory of his career tonight.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get a title shot off of this. I mean, I guess he could, especially if Merab wins, because obviously Merab's not going to fight Aljamain Sterling. So if Merab beats Jose Aldo, I feel like Chito could just... And we'd have to see how the Sugar Sean O'Malley versus Petr Yan fight plays out. But he could be just, I guess, the last man standing. I think he's one win away. But depending on how the dominoes fall in these next two bantamweight fights, he could find himself in a title fight. But with the UFC announcing they're going back to Rio, I would imagine they're going to want to put Jose Aldo on that fight. I doubt a champion's going to want to go to Rio to fight Jose Aldo, but you never know. Crazier things have happened. But you'd have to imagine if Jose Aldo wins, then beats Merab, who's Aljamain's teammate, that he would get the title fight, but especially because he has the win over Marlon Vera. But yeah, Chito is at worst 1-1. win away from a title fight. And if they do make another bantamweight fight, I would probably put Cheeto on that same card outside of headlining another fight night, because he was a superstar in this arena. I mean, Dom got a big pop when he walked out, and Marlon got booed when he walked out. But by the end of the night, there were a sea of Ecuadorian flags in the arena. Like, people were literally trying to climb over the barricades just to get to Marlon Vera. This man is a rock star in every definition of the word, and he might just be a big enough deal to just will himself into a title shot. So good on him.
Yeah, I feel like we're on the cusp of something really special with this guy, because we've literally sort of, we've basically seen him grow up in the UFC. We don't realize, like, he's still super young in fight years, but he's got a ton of UFC experience behind him. And what's crazy about him is that he can lose rounds, but every time he lands, especially recently, every time he lands, it is with devastation, drops his opponents. And it's like, when he shows up to these post-fight press conferences, it's like he's not even in a fight, Jose. There's not a mark on this man's face whatsoever. And he's just such a powerhouse at 135. And he's been saying for the last couple of years, just, it's the evolution, adding new wrinkles to the game. And I feel like we're like in the middle of prime Cheeto Vera right now. And I feel like the best is yet to come, if that makes sense, considering the run that he's on right now. Do you agree with that as well? Do you feel like we're at the tipping point almost for Cheeto Vera, that we still haven't even seen this man's best yet?
Well, I mean, he seems like the type of individual that, specifically with Jason Perillo, they really do kind of put together a perfect game plan for his opponents, and specifically using Cheeto's strengths. Like, we all heard Marlon Vera say, Jason Perillo texted him a photo like 6 days ago with Dominic Cruz's head down in a similar manner that they capitalized with a head kick. We all know Cheeto Vera kicks extremely hard, asked Frankie Edgar about it. So to use those openings, but to tailor make these openings specifically for Marlon, I think this combination of Jason Perillo and Cheeto Vera is just a thing of beauty right now, and especially for that whole Ruka camp. So I would say the best is yet to come, but I think it's going to be opponent by opponent.
Last thing I want to ask you about before we let you go, I know you have a million things going on, but I know you in particular were very high on this featured bout, the Battle of the Yasmins. And again, you're in the building. You got to hear it all go down. You mentioned on the Slack channel that Yasmin Yurgui was over like Rover there. So just talk about what you heard, what you felt, what you saw in that arena with these two women, especially Yasmin Yurgui, the performance she had, and the reaction from everybody from it.
Yasmin was a rock star, for sure. She got, without a doubt, the biggest pop of the entire night. There's a reason she was a media day, and she was 0-0 in the UFC. She's very, every definition of the word, a prospect. Even she said that herself. Like, she wants to fix her weaknesses leading into each fight, because she has so much to learn. But outside of Dominic Cruz, honestly, I take that back. Dom got a big pop from just being San Diego, and Marlon got a big pop for the finish. I think Yasmin's pop was bigger on the entrance. She was a rock star. She was a big deal. She had the longest post-fight scrum. There was a lot of Mexican media here, Hispanic media for Marlon, and I think they putting her in that position with Marlon headlining was just magic. It was perfect for how the fight played out, the placement on the card, and everything. Because everyone that was whining about the placement on the card, it made you pay attention. You might have been annoyed that she was the third fight from the top, but then you tuned in to see what the big deal was, and now you're a fan. So don't judge a book by its cover, because I think I'm not calling her top. She's far from the top 15, but she's going to, moving forward, she's going to be a prospect that you're going to want to watch. And I would pair her with Moreno or Marlon or whoever, and keep her in this area, in the Southwest area, for sure. I don't want her fighting the Apex. She needs the full Hispanic crowd here, for sure. And if they go to Mexico, stick her on there. If they go anywhere in the Southwest, Southern California, Texas, Arizona, T-Mobile Arena, put her on that card with another big Hispanic superstar.
Completely agree. 23 years of age, the future is very bright. Jose, thank you very much, my man. I know a lot going on. They're going to shut everything down back there. And onwards to Salt Lake City, right? You will be there?
Correct. I will be there. I leave Tuesday morning. So stay tuned.
All right. Thank you, Jose. Great job as always. And we'll see you UFC 278 Fight Week. There he is, Jose Youngs, very busy man. Hello, AK. Hello, my best friend.
Hello, I'm not busy.
No, that's why you're here.
I am free. I am free to talk about this card.
So talk about Marlon Vera. Talk about this knockout. Man. And did you watch it in slow motion a bunch of times to see the impact of that kick?
No, I did not. I am not.
That's right up your alley.
I am not bloody elbow freak Kristen King, all right, who wanted – I wasn't watching closely. Did they go to Dom after? They took him out of the cage as soon as they could, right? I don't recall seeing his face after, or maybe I just wasn't looking.
I didn't see much.
Okay, good. Here. Good. And, you know, when he got hit, obviously he immediately went down. That's why he was so vulnerable to a couple of those follow-up shots. So I did not see the aftermath. People don't send me pictures. I don't want to know. I don't like seeing these things. I don't need to see a man who doesn't have a nose anymore after a kick like that. So just amazingly well-timed. Yeah, the stuff about Eric Nixick, just sending him a picture. He said, send him a screenshot from a previous Dom fight to show his habit of sort of ducking in the same direction every time, I guess at a similar angle. Amazing, amazing. The sort of thing that I don't even know if Chito Vera practiced it, because he said he got it about a week ago that Eric Nixick just sent him this picture. Or if it's just instinctual, because I'm sure it was in the back of his mind at the very least, something he thought about going in. I mean, you're fighting Dominic Cruz, there's probably a lot of things you got to think about. But once it actually started manifesting itself during the fight, I mean, Eric Nixick tweeted it. You know, he tweeted again to everybody tonight as the fight was happening, like, oh, watch how Dom reacts when he gets, you know, rolls a punch with his arm, hits his arm, and then he's always going to sort of go a little bit further. And then it happened, you know? I mean, the fight game is unpredictable, especially, you know, when you're the guy in there, you're trying to make live reads, live adjustments. But, boy, some coaches, they're really on the money, and there is a lot of data on Dominic Cruz. This is probably something he's probably done all his career and maybe was just a little bit faster at pulling back out of that position. But he lingered there. He lingered there tonight, and Chito Vera did not miss. Did not miss. It's what is quickly becoming one of the most feared pair of legs in all of MMA.
Yeah, the man is just on fire right now, and we talked about this because early on the press conference stream, there was some Dom slander. There was some Dominic Cruz slander. And we weren't accepting of the Dominic Cruz slander because he actually looked really good in this fight. He won the first two rounds on all three judges' scorecards. It's 29-28 heading into the fourth round on all three judges' scorecards. And he was looking pretty good. Now, was Marlon Vera landing and dropping him? Sure. But Dominic Cruz was winning the fight, and had that fourth round ended and we go into a fifth, there's a very good chance we're looking at a 2-2 fight heading into round number five, and things would have been really interesting. So what did you think of Dom tonight? Because he was a pretty sizable dog. You said even on the preview show, and I think a lot of people agreed, like, we would love to pick Dominic Cruz, but as you lay out sort of all the intangibles that both guys bring to the table, we just felt like Vera, it was more Vera's time at this point in both of their careers, and that's exactly how it played out. But I mean, Dominic Cruz looked pretty damn good up until he got kicked in the face. Did he not?
He looked great. It was vintage Cruz. We were talking about it in the Slack. I was tweeting about it. Man, like, this guy's he's so unique. He's such a true original. I really want people to appreciate it, you know, as long as this guy is around. I gotta address some trolls in the YouTube in a bit. I hope you'll appreciate him while he's around, because there just is nobody like him. And again, I know we can say it, I know we can write about it all the time, but until you, like, every time, I think people forget until they watch him. And I know he hasn't been as active as he could be, you know, over the past few years, injuries, other obligations, whatever. So when you see him, it's so special. And I get it why people forget in between. There's 8-10 months a year between fights, they don't remember. There's just nobody can do his style like he does. They can't. Like, there's people have taken elements of it. Some people have evolved the style and, like, made it better. You can go like TJ Dillashaw. You can say there's some of that in Cody Garbrandt. That's fine. I understand that. But the way that Dom does it is special. Again, the problem is you get older. His style requires so much precision. And because he was the only guy that could do it the way he did it for so long, that's why he was so successful. But when you're losing just a step, you know, you're just a quarter of a second slower than you were before. You're a quarter of a step slower than you were before. Now you see the difference. He's getting hurt a lot more. This is the first time we've seen him straight cold knocked out in his career. It's not that he never got hit before. If you look at a lot of his best fights in the past, even during his dominant times, he could get clipped. He could get hurt in the feet. Look at the Demetrius Johnson fight, fighting a smaller guy. I don't think he got knocked down, but he was getting hurt a lot before he just realized, oh, wait a minute, I'm like twice the size of DJ. I'm just going to throw him around. But there are past fights. Uriah Faber hurt him in their second fight. There are past fights where he got hurt, but he could recover faster. He wasn't quite as – couldn't get caught quite as clean as he did by that head kick tonight. So he's had a history of, again – people could get him, but he could recover fast and just immediately get back into his own game plan. Now he's getting hit a lot, and it's taking just a little bit longer to recover, or as happened tonight, getting hit by a strike that he and nobody else at 135, I think, could recover from if they got hit by it. So yeah, he looked really good. Up on all three judges' scorecards heading into the fourth, and the tide was certainly turning. I think Vera would have gone on to win a decision anyway, but up to that point, Dominic Cruz was doing just fine.
So Marlon Vera has 4 wins in a row now. Davy Grant, unanimous decision. That was a crazy fight. Davy Grant gives everybody tough fights. Frankie Edgar, we all remember how that fight was going. The knockout was absolutely ridiculous. Rob Font, great win for him. And then this was the biggest win of his career, knocking off a former champion in Dominic Cruz. So we have it's a mess right now, 135. It's not like a bad problem mess. It's a good problem mess. We have a lot of intrigue. We have a lot of contenders at 135. We have a title fight booked between Aljamain Sterling and TJ Dillashaw for UFC 280. We have Jose Aldo, Merab Dawalishvili getting ready to fight next week. On that same title fight card in October, we have Piotr Jan getting ready to fight Sean O'Malley. We have other interesting 35ers who are making their way up the ladder. So let me just say this. Let me just ask you this. I know it's hard to tell what's going to happen. We have to wait for all these other things to happen, AK. But true or false, Marlon Vera's next fight will be for the UFC Bantamweight title.
I don't think so. We said before, this was asked a couple of times. We brought up in the preview show and on the Q&A, you know, if he has a dominant 5-round decision or at least convincing win over Cruz or gets that highlight reel finish, does he immediately jump to the front of the line? And I just don't think he has that level of popularity yet. And I don't know if he quite has. I mean, I think he has the resume, but again, there's a lot of 135 is so deep. It does help that if Merab beats Jose Aldo, again, Merab very likely will not fight Aljamain Sterling. But if Aldo beats Merab, I think he's ahead of Chito Vera. We've said Sean O'Malley, if he beats Piotr Jan, is definitely ahead. So that's two names right there if they get wins. If both those guys lose, it does kind of clear a path, but that's two ifs already. So if this is a yes or no question, there's a lot that has to fall into place for Marlon to definitely get the next title shot. And I'm saying no, I don't think that happens.
I also don't think it happens. And I have the matchup ready for on to the next one tomorrow for Marlon Vera. And I'm excited to get your reaction to this matchup, AK, but
vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Let's talk about this co-main event. I'm just going to let you go, AK. I'm just going to let you go because you were very high on this. You wanted to take a victory lap. David Onama taking on Nate Landwehr. The fight is absolutely ridiculous. It is bananas. And if you haven't seen it, there is not enough words that I can say into this microphone right now that will do it any kind of justice. You have to go back and watch this fight. It's just absolutely insane. But victory lap away, AK. Victory lap away. Penultimate fight, co-main event, whatever you want to call it. That fight friggin' ruled, and it was the fight of the night, even over the Jasmines tonight.
Yeah, it was at times super sloppy and like objectively terrible. But that's how some great fights are. Some great fights. I mean, we talked about, you know, one of the front runners for the fight of the year, Glover Teixeira and Jiří Procházka. Some of what we love about that fight is how many like pull your hair moments there are. Like, why are they going for that? Or how did he get caught by that? And how is this guy not finished? And why is this happening? And that's some of what we love about fighting, right? From a technical standpoint, the Haraghi and Lucindo fight was definitely better. But boy, you that quality of that Landwehr Onama fight is something you cannot train for. I think it was Casey. I think you said in our Slack the best that like fighting exhausted is such an important skill to have in MMA. And that is something like Nate Landwehr can do to a T. He has just been through the wars. And David Onama maybe someday will too. But Nate Landwehr has been through the wars that David Onama has not been through yet. There's really no way to train for fighting through that kind of adversity. You can spar a million rounds. It doesn't matter until you've actually done those. And until you've actually done that in a live fire setting, you're just not going to be able to do it. Anyone who's seen Nate Landwehr's fights, other one with Darren Elkins, and his fights before in M1 Global, he had like at least three of these kind of wars in M1 Global. I don't think he won all of them either, but he went the distance in them. That's how you pull off what he pulled off tonight, because he was probably KO'd in round one. I'm not sure how he came back. People said David Onama punched him so many times that he woke back up. It kind of looked like that. It was so messed up. But I was really happy to see this fight deliver, because even my official prediction, both on the shows we did and in my on MMAfighting.com, was I thought Onama is probably going to get a first round finish. And my alternative to that was like, oh, but if it goes the distance, I mean, we're going to get a classic. I just didn't think that Landwehr would be able to survive. Somehow he did. And to credit to Onama as well, listen, he survived a lot of stuff too. I mean, Landwehr was threatening with submissions. He was landing some classic Nate train bombs. I don't even know if Onama wanted to come out for the third round, but he did and actually finished the fight pretty strong. So it's going to be a long time, I think, till you see a fight like this again. Though I guess I would have said the same thing about Jiří and Glover, and we just saw like the featherweight version of that. So all I got to tell people is, listen, when Nate Landwehr is on a main card, you got to tune in. The guy does not have boring fights. He does not have boring fights. He gets knocked out sometimes. He ends up on the other end of highlights, but he does not have boring fights. So credit to him and David Onama and referee Mike Beltran for letting this insanity go on, because I don't even know if he should have, but he did. And we got a closet for it.
It's one of those fights that if you haven't seen it, you're going to watch it. You're just going to laugh out loud, but cheer. And it's just got a little bit of everything. Great fight, clear fight of the night. The Jasmines had a tremendous featured bout. Haraghi gets it done, unanimous decision. Lucindo, 20 years old, bright future ahead of her as well. I'm excited to see these two prospects develop at 115. Great performance from Azamat Mirzakhanov. This guy's going to be a problem. Wait to see this man wrestle on top of the striking that he has. That body shot was nasty. Finishes Devin Clark. Priscilla Cachoeira wasn't messing around. 65 seconds puts away Ariane Lipsky. And then Gerald Meerschaert kicks off the main card with the sub, a clubbing sub, a Bruno Silva. Good stuff. Real good stuff. And then the prelims are good too. Angela Hill, Lupi Godin has a great fight. Martin Budai, Lucas Bresky was interesting. Nina Nunez, happy trails. She retires after her win over Cynthia Calvillo. Mowgli Benitez, back on track, needed a win badly. Knocks out Charlie Onoveros. Some brutal ground and pound. Tyson Nam is back after about 19 months away.
Man.
Takes Ode Osborne's flying knee attempt, counter right hook, knocks out Ode Osborne. Josh Quinlan should get the sportsmanship bonus of the night as well for that incredible knockout of Jason Witt. Could have been worse, but he was able to hold back. And then the first fight, Yusuf Zalal got going in the third round. Majority draw against Damon Blackshear. And that was your card, AK. What fight, which fighter that didn't get a bonus or anything like that stood out to you, impressed you the most before you go to the
Oh, on a solid card like this, I mean, there's a lot of people you feel like could have gotten bonuses, but I thought the ones they picked were fine. If you're only going to pick one fight of the night, they should have just given out two. Why not just give out two fight of the night bonuses plus two performance bonuses? I don't know. Because Haruki and Lucindo definitely should have got one. It was a really, really great fight and an awesome debut.
Yep.
I think it was Cody Stamen on Twitter who said, like, that's the best debut fight I've ever seen. And I'm sure we could find other examples, but like, yeah, this was really strong for, especially for two fighters who only one of them kind of has a track record with another, you know, notable promotion, Combate Global. So, and even then, I didn't think the UFC did a great job of promoting Yasmin Haruki's debut, but and definitely not Yasmin Lucindo, who I think was barely mentioned. And of course, our own Guillermo Cruz, wrote a great piece on last year. So it could have been marketed better. And I think they could, because their failure to do so, they could have made up for that by giving them the $50,000 bonus. But whatever, there's a lot of people, and I don't know who's involved in this decision making. So definitely would have given them a bonus. Otherwise, I'm pretty okay. Oh, I mean, Josh Quinlan. One shot KO. I mean, holy crap. Like that was awesome. I don't know how you choose between him and Tyson Nam. Both are great. Again, I say don't choose and just give it to them both. And freaking Gerald Meerschaert. He outstruck Bruno Silva. He outstruck him. And it's not like Gerald Meerschaert's a terrible striker, but Bruno Blandado, that standing and cracking people, that is your specialty. So, hey, perfect game plan by Gerald Meerschaert and his team. They solved his puzzle. Outstruck him. This is not a lucky shot that set up the submission. Outstruck him, hurt him on the feet, finished him in the third. It was masterful. So yeah, you could have given bonuses to a lot more people. Again, all finishes should get bonuses. All fighters should get paid more. You know, we'll say it every show if we have to, but come on now.
Gerald Meerschaert floating like a butterfly and stinging like a bee. I mean, amazing. He's slipping punches. This man's out here looking like freaking Floyd Mayweather.
I thought he was crazy. Asking for so much trouble. I thought he can't pull. I thought he can't be just like slipping like Anderson Silva matrix dodging punches. I'm like, that's not going to last. It worked. He did it enough that it worked.
Yep. That Christoph Jocko fight sent him down to South Florida, got his head off the center line, moving well, slipping punches. He's now 4-1 since the 17-second knockout against Khamzat Chimaev. Everyone thought there's no way this man could come back from that. And now we're seeing continued evolution in the game of GM3. Calls out Andre Petroski. Didn't really call him out. He basically answered Petroski's call out. You want some, come get some. Good stuff. Just classic pro wrestling promo.
He will fight anyone.
Good night of fights. Of course he will.
He will fight anyone. Good night of fights. Because for me, I think Petroski would be... Petroski has had a really great start to his UFC career. I consider him like behind Meerschaert in the rankings. So he's just giving a guy. I had Bruno Silva behind him in the rankings. Those are two dangerous guys behind him in the rankings. And Gerald Meerschaert is just like, yeah, bring it on. I don't care. I don't care about rankings. I don't, you know, just give me exciting fights. And he fought Muradov. There was a lot of people did not want to fight Mahmoud Muradov. And then the guy was on like a 19 fight win streak or something. And Gerald Meerschaert is like, yeah. Yeah, game Muradov, and he beat him. So,
smushed him.
A fighter's fighter. Absolutely a fighter's fighter.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to the peeps. By the way, if you want to check out what these fighters got paid, you can check it out on MMAfighting.com because we got all those figures because the event was in California. And God bless Andy Foster and the California State Athletic Commission for being open, disclosing that information so you guys could see it for yourselves.
It's always a good thing too. If fighters know how much their other fighters are getting paid, then they have a better idea of their own value. So, good job, Mr. Foster. Got a first up, we got some trolls here. Some troll comments.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Can you just block and ban that guy? Just whatever. Like,
I wish I could block and ban him. Block and ban him from my life.
All right. Love you too, Jed.
Oh, I have to apologize to America. I apologize to America. I was yes. No, not for the Jed. I don't apologize for the Jed Mishu stuff. That I'm doubling down on that. No, I was saying before. I thought that Chito Vera had said that Eric Nixick had sent him pictures for some reason before in the press conference. He was talking about, and people in the comments were not so kindly correcting me, saying it was Jason Perillo, you idiots, and they were right. Both about Jason Perillo and me being
an idiot. That wasn't a misspeak. You actually thought that Eric Nixick is just
no. I thought yeah, just randomly. I thought he had slid into Chito Vera. Thanks for helping me out on that one, producer Casey. Mike,
I thought you were just making a mistake too. But
Mike, you're my best friend. This is where were you on that one dipshit moment? I feel. I mean, really, I'm the dipshit. But anyway, so thank you, people, for the rude corrections. Sometimes I need to be slapped around, apparently, but.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and put this up, but I take it back now.
No. Yeah, not tonight. No, you got to revoke. You got to revoke the bonus, the post match show bonus.
Well, since we talked about pay, real quick. This comment.
How the hell is Cruz's purse only want $175,000? Yeah. I have no idea.
I know.
That was kind of shockingly low for someone who we consider the GOAT of the bantamweight division, you know. But
yeah.
I don't know. Hey, you know what? Dominic Cruz says he doesn't have a manager, so maybe.
You have to imagine that he probably was very happy with his contract when he was getting title fights. So this is his third fight in a row that wasn't a title fight. But I wonder if this is all part of a longer contract, like an 8-fight contract, let's say, that he signed when he was still champion. So at that point, it's like, oh, I'm getting pay-per-view. I'm winning fights. I'm getting that. So I'm getting double. And even if I'm not winning fights, I'm getting pay-per-view points from the Cejudo fight. I'm getting pay-per-view points from the Cody Garbrandt fight. So it doesn't matter. Then he loses the belt. Then he's just back down to his base pay. Probably not getting pay-per-view points, I assume, for Casey Kenney, Pedro Munoz fights. Then suddenly it doesn't look that good anymore, does it? The contract doesn't look that great anymore. But he probably signed this when he was champion, so he's like, "Oh, great, yeah, pay per view points, champions salary. I'm killing it. I'm not gonna lose the belt anytime soon. What do I care?"
I don't know. I saw an interview and Dana White said that fighters are getting paid what they are getting paid.
Yeah. That's what he deserves now. He's not a champion anymore. How can he work more? Yeah. Was it you, Casey, who said in our Slack that? Gabriel Benitez is made like $100,000, I think.
No, it wasn't made 100.
Who? Damon. Someone mentioned that. Damon's mentioned 100. Yeah. I guess 50 plus 50.
Yeah, that's how math works. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if it was. Wow. Oh yeah. Let's all assume it's show and win, Casey. Right? Because nobody gets paid just show. Right. Right. Dick. So. So. It is. So it is show and win then. It is 50. All right. Gosh. Let's be professional.
Oh my gosh.
So 50 to show. 50 to show. And then he did win. 50 to win for Gabriel Benitez. He is a veteran too, but it is kind of weird to hear like Gabriel Benitez made 100K with the win and Cruz only made 175 considering their sort of gap in star power. But that is the UFC pay system at work.
You know, got actually a nice chunk of change tonight. Angela Hill.
Hey.
So we got 190. She walked home with $190,000, I think. Is that what it was? Yeah. Good for her.
Well done.
Is that right? Did I not see that right? Maybe I messed that up.
You are correct, sir.
Yeah.
95-95, yeah.
Nice.
And good for her because, again, she missed out on a lot of win purses in the last few years. So
yeah, so and just great fight. A fight I wasn't expecting her to win, and it was Loopy that was throwing the more strikes, and Angela Hill that kind of, I don't want to say grappling won her the fight, but the mixing the martial arts won her that fight, and just a great performance. And I don't think Loopy lost too much. I mean, Loopy obviously lost a half a paycheck, but as far as her stock in the strawweight division, I think it's still there, and Angela Hill definitely needed that fight, definitely needed that win. So big win for her. tonight.
Huge
one, yeah. Ooh, let's talk about a bummer, maybe.
I mean, it was one of those things where I felt like the question is Cynthia Calvillo done in the UFC? It's one of those questions where I was like, nah, I don't know. But it all kind of depended on the performance. And yeah, she went the distance, but man, she looked real gun shy tonight. She looked real gun shy. And I kind of understand, because her last two fights, she got bolted by Jessica Andrade, real violent finish. And then her last fight was a very violent loss to Andrea Lee, like a really bad, brutal loss where she had the fight had to be stopped in the stool because her face was just an absolute mess. So I understand, I guess, the gun shyness when you take two brutal finish losses like that in back-to-back fights, but Nina Nunes isn't really like a big knockout puncher, big knockout striker. So you felt like if any fight was going to kind of get you loose again, this would be the one. And she just didn't have it. She just didn't have it. I'm stunned a judge gave her a card. Even Nina Nunes is like, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah. I didn't think there's any chance Cynthia Calvillo won that third round, but I think they will give her one more shot at 115, mm-hmm. but it ain't gonna be a fight that's gonna do her any favors. But what do you think, AK?
Yeah, it has to be at 115. I don't think they have any interest in she gave flyweight a try, and she faced some tough opponents at flyweight. Don't get me wrong. It's not like she's the worst fighter ever because she couldn't beat the names that she fought at 125. She fought some really tough opponents, but it's obviously just not happening there. And strawweight, I dropped down to strawweight is not going to solve all her problems, but at least as far as making it sort of interesting for the UFC and kind of, you know, the give me one last chance fight at a new, you know, back at 115, if she can make it, no guarantees. It's a weight class she's missed, I want to say, I believe three times she's missed the 115 mark. So it could be a tricky proposition, but that is her best shot. Otherwise, listen, there's a lot of strong, if she wants to stay at 125, the UFC ends up parting ways with her. There's a lot of other promotions out there with decent women's flyweight divisions. So maybe she has to go that route. But I do think she should, if she can make a real commitment to dropping back down to strawweight, give it a shot.
All right.
Why can't they supply DC with the fan with enough batteries for a whole card? Oh man. Yeah, so apparently it was very humid in San Diego. I think that was the word that was most used on the entire broadcast.
It's been humid in Southern California for a few weeks, uncharacteristically humid. So so San Diego's about 2 hour drive south from here. So yeah, it is very humid, and that is an older arena. And I guess I'm pretty confident that the air conditioning in that arena was probably from the 70s, and it wasn't quite anticipating the temperature rise of the world. So I don't think it could match the weather outside. Yeah, so. Poor DC.
Poor DC. DC and Bisping. Yeah, not a great prelim for those two guys. It was a little uncomfortable at times, but I thought they were better in the main card. They improved.
We made it through.
Is Hargi the best Mexican prospect yet?
I don't think it's more so than Yair Rodriguez. I think Yair Rodriguez was very, very hyped when he came in.
Or Moreno.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even Brandon Moreno. So there's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, I mean, Alexa Grasso was supposed to be the co-main event.
Yeah,
right here. So we have Grasso. Aldana's fighting soon, right? Is she fighting soon? Macy Chazon, it's coming. Is that next week? That's not next week, is it?
Is that next week's card?
Yeah. But regardless, she's a great Mexican prospect. She's not from Tijuana, though, right?
I think she is from Tijuana.
Oh, she actually is from Tijuana. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, that's just exciting. The UFC needs to have another card soon somewhere in Mexico, right?
Yeah. They've got the names for it.
Yeah. Like, it's just, they just need it. I mean, the crowd was awesome. I was down in TJ about a month ago, and just going through, I drove by just random streets. I drove by two jiu-jitsu gyms in TJ. I'm like, whoa. It's just like, I saw more MMA gyms than I saw boxing gyms when I was in Mexico. maybe I was just, maybe my eyes were just looking for that, you know, kind of like whatever car you're driving, you seem to see that car everywhere. Maybe you're just looking for it, but I did see more MMA gyms in Tijuana. So yeah, it's an exciting time for Mexican MMA. What do we got here?
Is she the best? I don't know, but she's really good.
Yeah.
If Josh Quinlan hits follow-up shots, you think he would have had a better shot at a bonus? Probably not, but I understand the question.
Yeah, I wish I would think his pulling back is what should have got on bonus. I love that. Yeah. I love that he like went in and was like, he had to pull that punch. He could have thrown his own shoulder out. He could have damaged himself.
Yeah, I don't know how he did that. That was like, because he was right. Like, it was whoever, Mr. Witt's family needs to send Josh Quinlan a thank you card for only knocking out Jason Witt once.
I know
we kind of talked about Jason Witt's, you know, is his chin not the best, but he got hit with such a hard shot. Whew, boy, I hope he's okay.
Do you think Bresky should have won, or did I listen to too much to the commentators? Yeah, it was a weird one, wasn't it? Bresky was looking like a flyweight, the volume he was throwing. But he did definitely slow down the second half of that fight, AK. I thought, anyway. Budai was landing some good shots. He was definitely landing the more impactful shots, but like early on, Bresky was looking, real good. I mean, I think he landed like 50-something strikes in the first round. Something crazy like that.
Yeah, I don't think it's crazy at all if you thought that Bresky won the fight. I wish I was watching a little bit closer to tell you whether like I thought a robbery or not.
Where are they?
I'm probably leaning towards not robbery, but I mean, looking at MMA decisions.
Oh, it's a robbery if you go by MMA decisions.
I believe this is. There is one score for Martin Budai, 29-28, and then there's what looks to be at least 13 media scores. 13, yeah. Thank you, Casey. Media scores for Bresky. So,
and 90% of the fans had Bresky winning too, and they don't know anything.
Yeah, it's tough because Budai's output just wasn't very high. It just wasn't very high, and the argument for him would be that I guess he landed the more damaging shots. But man, it's not like he had like Bresky had like super in trouble. He did clearly hurt him a few times. Don't get me wrong, there he landed some really good shots in there. If you're just saying like the top 10 hardest punches of the fight, yeah, Budai probably had like 7 of them. But man, he didn't land like just Bresky was landing a lot more. But he did tire out. So I don't think the worst score, but it does. If you're Bresky, I'm surprised it wasn't a little more complaining on his side. He seemed kind of like, you know, annoyed, but not like, okay, he just kind of like walked it off. But I'm amazed it wasn't a little more of a protest.
Bresky outlanded him in every single round, 41-25 in round one, 43-19 in round two, 34-22 in round three. But yikes. The tide was turning a little bit in round three.
Yeah.
But
stats, right? What does stats mean?
It means nothing.
Stats. All right, what do we got here? Just saw a question. I lost the question, but just more of a comment. And I think this is fair. And we were kind of criticizing DC, but I think during the main event, I felt DC, you know, and even with his relationship with Dominic Cruz, I didn't get any of that sense. I felt DC did actually a pretty good job breaking down the fight while it was happening.
Oh wait, I thought he was talking about Dominic Cruz in the question. I thought he was saying, I thought Dominic Cruz did well during the match.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know. I don't know. I swear I don't know. I can't. Mike? I don't know.
No. But yes, I thought Bisping and DC were really bad early, and then they got better as the main card went on. They must have got like some kind of talking to. I don't know how you could listen to that broadcast and not be like, come on. Like, I compared it to the beginning of Pee Wee's Big Adventure with Francis and Pee Wee Herman arguing over the bike. Like, every single thing, it was like, oh, yeah, well, I landed 7 punches. Oh, yeah, well, I landed 8 punches. It was just back and forth bickering. It was like two brothers just over and over in the backseat of a freaking minivan during a family vacation. Yeah. It was just brutal to listen to. And then they finally got cooking in the main card. And yeah, I thought they did much better in the main event. And I thought they were great in the co-main event because there was just, they reacted like I was, just laughing Yeah. Hysterically, like, I can't
believe it wasn't too much to break down. It was just a ridiculous fight, basically. It was just like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but going back to DC and Bisping, I think a lot of it has to do with just they just don't know those fighters. And I don't, maybe Dom's kind of onto something. They just don't do enough research on those early people. And obviously, like, the co-main event was freaking awesome. The Yasmin versus Yasmin fight was just awesome. So you really can't mess that one up. And in the main event, they just know those fighters so well, both because of the ranking and just, I think, just the friendships they have behind the scenes. They just did a good job on it. So, yeah, the more invested they're in the fight, it's better. But, yeah, as far as the prelims, they just seem very unaware of what was going on.
Yep.
Cool.
Anything
else?
Sorry, my ears.
We take a couple more.
Yeah, I got a couple more. All right, here we go. It's an interesting question.
Do you guys, Ralph Madrid, do you guys think it's time for Dom Cruz to start thinking about retirement and not get to the point where it can affect his legacy? I mean, I don't know how you felt about this, AK, but did you end that? Did you end the night thinking, man, maybe Dana White needs to have that conversation with Dominic Cruz? I didn't really feel that way, but what did you think?
I don't think he has to have a conversation. I think, like we said, he seemed to be fighting fine, but he has a ton of mileage on him. He's been fighting since he was pretty young. He's been fighting at a high level since forever, since I don't even know what his like seventh, eighth pro fight. He's been fighting against, you know, people with Wikipedia entries, however you want to gauge, you know, what is a high quality MMA competition. But however you want to gauge it, he's been fighting high quality MMA competition for the better part of well over a decade. And again, we say for the most part, you know, a lot of people, like when they say why he's been fighting for so long, it's like, oh, he's avoided damage. That's true. But think about all the camps he's been in, all the rehab from injuries. Like, it's the stuff, all the stuff in between, all the travel, all the work he does in between. You know, he's an analyst for the UFC now. He's done a lot of traveling, not even to fight, not even to train, just to in his work for the UFC, right? This stuff, it all takes its toll on you. And he's getting older and older and older. I think we said 36, 37 next month. And again, not 37, you know, years like this guy where I've never been in a real fight in my entire life. 37 years where this guy's been fighting and sparring and training and wearing everything down in his body. And it just adds up. So whether you think his chin is gone or not, it doesn't really matter. It cannot be what it was 5 years ago. It has to be worse. And in that sense, there's the health aspects. I will say I don't think any fighter should take their legacy into account when deciding whether they should retire or not. That's legacy is obviously, if you're a fighter, you want to have this amazing, flawless legacy. Everyone wants to go on a high note. You never want to have that slump like BJ Penn has had. You don't want to go out that way. But if you're a fighter, you really cannot worry about that. You cannot worry about your legacy. That is for fans. That is for maybe, I don't know, other people who know you. If you're a fighter, you think your health, your money. And also just like, do you still want to do it? Do you still enjoy doing it? Because once you stop, yeah, it's MMA. You can kind of always come back in some capacity. But really, once you stop doing something at the highest level, and this doesn't just go for MMA, this goes for any sport, you never get to go back to that world again. You know, I always bring up Kobe Bryant as an example. Not one of my favorite players, but a guy who played for a long, 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 long time. And near the end was like battling injuries. But that's a guy who knew that, like, once I say I'm done with the NBA, I don't get to play an NBA game ever again. I can go play pickup basketball. Maybe I can do play in a pro league overseas or something. Who knows? You know, there's other options. But I never get to do it at the highest, highest level that I'm used to. And that's the same with Dominic Cruz. It's like, even if he retired and came back in like 2 or 3 years, he wouldn't be in that mode that he's in now, which is just this prime mode of competition and training and focus. It wouldn't be the same. So once you exit that, you can't go back. And that's, I think, the thing he's going to consider the most, not legacy, even though for us as fans, yeah, we'd love to see him go up now instead of on 3, 4, 5 straight losses, something like that.
I think it just has to do with what Dom thinks of. Is legacy important? And how much his legacy is going to affect his income for the rest of his life. If he does this again and say he loses 4 more fights, gets knocked out bad, then like we're going to kind of forget how great he was. And it's slightly different, but I almost think of like Hinton Burrell. Hinton Burrell was, there were talk about Hinton Burrell being one the best ever, but now we barely talk about who we, I bet new fans who came into the sport maybe the last 3 or 4 years have no idea who Hinnon Brown even is. And he was such a dominant fixture in the bantamweight division. But once he lost to TJ, he just continued to lose over and over. And say like he lost once to TJ, they just retired. There'll be still conversations about him, but he went on to lose like 6 fights in a row bad. So his legacy is completely ruined. And, you know, in a lot of these fights, a lot of these fighters, they use that legacy for future seminars, future autograph sessions, fan expos, you know, making DVDs of, you know, how to do guillotines, you know. Those things matter. So it's really up to Dominic Cruz and how he just wants, how he looks at it. And also, is he okay with not being the best or not even thinking he can be the best? Is he okay going, well, if I can just compete with these kids, you know, as a guy in my upper 30s, that's good enough for me. Is he okay? Like whatever. Like, I think of like, say like someone like, I don't follow sports too much, but I used to love Akeem Olajuwon. You know, he finished out his career on the Toronto Raptors on the bench.
Magical.
And, yeah. And I guess, you know, in those fights where you don't get punched in the face, it's a little different, but how's Dom going to, can Dom just be, you know, a guy on the roster? Are their egos able to take that? I don't know. Does the UFC even want that? Him being, you know, a commentator, that's a little different too. So that's for Dom to answer, to ask himself and answer. But Dom looked good tonight. He didn't suck. He just lost to freaking one of the hottest bantamweights in the world right now. You know, he lost to a guy with a non-human chin. You know what I mean? Like, so like, I put Dom against someone outside of the top, well, in the back end of the top 10, rather than like maybe one of the hottest bantamweights in the world right now, I think maybe we'll have a better answer. But I think it's a very fair question, because that was a bad knockout, and it's one of those knockouts that it's gonna be hard to get that mental image out of our mind.
Yeah, first you time know? We've ever seen him knocked out like cold like that.
Yeah,
we've never seen that before.
When we saw Anderson get knocked out by I know it's not the same thing, but we saw Anderson get knocked out by Weidman. Mm-hmm. It was just like that mental image was never there, and then we saw we're like, oh, it turns out you're human. You know, so, you know, that's just that's a question for him.
Yeah. Agreed.
I think we're good. Anything else you want to add?
What a somber note to end on. How great was that Onama Landwehr fight? My goodness. Yeah.
It was crazy.
I want Landwehr. I keep leaving Onama out. Onama was amazing in this fight as well, yeah. By the way. But Landwehr, for me, again, is the guy who's had like sort of the track record of these insane fights. I want him to be, at some point, if his health permitting, he should be mentioned along the, like, and he's not as high ranked as these guys and may never get there. He belongs in this conversation with the Vicente Luques, the Justin Gaethjes, the guys who, like, you see his name on a main card, you get super excited. I am not joking. That is, like, that is the level for me that this guy is at. Maybe I'm getting ahead of it, but I hope that that is the respect he earns over the next couple of years if he's able to stick around the UFC, string together just enough wins, put together just, you know, exciting performances, and again, stay alive, Nate Landwehr, stay alive. I don't know how many of these fights he can go through, to be honest. Like I said, he was doing this before the UFC, so I don't know how many of these he has left in him. But hopefully enough that people recognize that, yes, he is pound for pound one of the most exciting guys in all of MMA. It's crazy.
I like someone called him the non-problematic Mike Perry.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just 100% Tennessee. And if you have a problem with that, then listen, that's your own thing. All right.
Yeah. You got it.
There you go. All right. Get the music. AK, I'll see you in the morning. We'll do some matchmaking. I'm very excited to reveal my matchup for Cheeto tomorrow. Very excited to reveal this, and who knows, maybe a good idea or two for Mr. Cruz as well, but that's on to the next one, which we'll record tomorrow, and then you'll find it on the MMA Fighting Podcasting Network. But until then, for AK, for EKC, I am Mike Heck. Thank you for watching. Hope you guys enjoyed the card. I know I did. Good night, everyone.
Oh, I ran a poll. Who's the biggest star of UFC San Diego? Cheeto Vera, 71%.
Happy birthday, AK.
Sorry, birthday.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.